It's hard to believe, isn't it, when we are looking at the world today, with all the problems, all the confusion, that it is a higher age. But we really have left behind the darkest period of Kali Yuga, and we are relatively quite far in a Dwapara Yuga, a higher age, in the ascending cycle. The trouble is, most of mankind has not understood what the whole thing is all about. In action, in concept, in attitudes, most people in this world are still very much in a Kali Yuga. It's all geared to, the whole concentration is on outward satisfaction, ego satisfaction, body satisfaction. And the great advantages of this new age, due to science, due to technology, one of the greatest advantages is free time. Think of it. In the dark ages, people had used all their time, all their energy just to survive, just to make a living. It was just a very, very few of the privileged classes who had time to spend in higher pursuits, philosophy, the arts, religion. And now, at least in the industrialized countries, everybody is in that class. And what do people do due to ignorance? They waste that time and dissipate that energy in endless diversions. The average American, and that means every man, woman, and child, watches TV 44 hours a week. Can you imagine what we could do? What they could do? We are doing it, huh? We are doing it. But what they could do with that time, it's incredible. And so, unfortunately, mankind has turned away from God and God's laws and goes outward. And that is why we have this tremendous mess in the world. Now, you know, we are thinking it would be wonderful if there were peace in normal times. In a way, it is an advantage because it brings it home to us that more clearly that this world is not our home. That true security lies not in this outer world, and that we are seeking God. And then we have to consider just peaceful times, that is not enough. There were times when there was no thought of world war, when there was no problem with unemployment, when there were no problems with ecology. And during such a time, a great man said, the mass of men lead lives of quiet desperation. Quiet desperation. Why? Because there was a hunger still, there was a yearning still for something. Something essential was missing. And what was it? It was God. And so now we have to understand, in spite of the, wherever the cycle is, wherever age the world is in, each one has his own individual cycle. Because in the darkest periods, in a worse condition, there were men and women, perhaps not many, but there were some, who attained divine realization. And so regardless of what the world is going through, do not pay too much attention to that, but concentrate on the essentials. Because if we want to find God, we have to direct our energy in a constructive way. Psychologists say that man is a goal-searching creature, and if he doesn't have a goal, he disintegrates. And I think many people in this world are doing just that. They don't have a definite goal, and so their energy are not properly directed. I want to give you an example. This was an informal survey of a shopping mall parking area, and it showed that 60% of the people there could not remember the license number of their cars. 30% could not remember where they had parked their car. And 25% didn't know why they were there. They simply were there because they had nothing else important to do. Now, can you imagine if people are so confused, so having no direction in their lives, that it takes so long to get out of this maya? Most people in the world do not even know what the purpose of life is. And Master said, "You came, this is for all of us, you came on earth to accomplish a divine mission." Now, many people write to us and say, "Well, I feel I have a great mission to fulfill." But Master was not talking about an outer mission. He was talking about the inner mission, namely to be united with God. And then he said, "Realize how tremendously important that is." And he said, "Do not allow the narrow ego to obstruct your attainment of an infinite goal." And so now, we have to concentrate on God and not the outer show. Think of it. How many lives are behind us? And in those lives, we have experienced everything. Many lives we all have spent in male bodies. Many lives we have spent in female bodies. We have belonged to the different races and nationalities. We have been rich and poor. We have been famous and forgotten. We have lived in peace times and in times of war and turmoil. And where are those lives now? Where are they? In themselves, they had no value whatsoever, no meaning, because they were part of Maya. Their meaning was, or the value of those lives was, that we had countless opportunities to seek God and to grow. And obviously we have missed many of those opportunities. That's why we are still here. Now let's ask ourselves, why did we miss those many opportunities? Why? Because we concentrated so much on the external show and our external role that we pushed God out of our consciousness. God, our goal, the solution of all problems. And now, living in this time, naturally thoughts come like, what is the future going to be? Is there going to be war, and is this going to be this and that, and so on, all those various things? Of course those thoughts come. But now we have to be careful, because if we are dwelling, if we are permitting those thoughts to occupy our minds, God again is pushed out of our consciousness and another life is wasted. Isn't it true? I say this particularly because yesterday I got a message through one of the monks from somebody here saying that some of you, maybe all of you, are expecting a detailed preview of what's going to happen in the future. Now, so that you can think about it, thinking about the future, this is exactly what the great saints and the scriptures tell you not to do. Jesus said, sufficient unto the day is the evil thereof. You cannot, Master said again and again, you cannot carry the past and the present and the future. And particularly if you're not, we are usually escaping, analyze your thoughts, we are usually escaping into the past or into the future. And that is a total waste. We have to stay in the present, we have to discipline ourselves to stay in the present and fill that present with God. So, instead of, I'm not a fortune teller, you know, and instead I have a nice quotation by a master. He said, if you know the plot beforehand, when you see a motion picture or a performance on a stage, it will not be interesting. And so he continued, he said, it is good that you don't understand the movie drama God is playing in your life. You wouldn't be entertained if you knew what was going to happen before it took place. Rather, pray always to God in this way. Father, teach me to act out my role in this drama of life. Whether I am weak or strong, sick or well, high or low, rich or poor, with an immortal attitude. That I may at the end know the moral of it all. I think it was in a previous convocation when I said, write on a piece of paper, I am an immortal, and paste it on the mirror of your bathroom. So that you see it every morning and every time and in the evening, and you carry that thought through the day. I am an immortal. And you are just playing a role in this quick drama, but I am not that. I am an immortal. I am the soul. Did you take that off? The mirror? Put it on again. And those of you who are new now, who have never heard me say that, put it on. It's a great help. So, Master said, life is very tricky, don't trust it, for it is not what it seems to be, and full of disappointments. And he said, perfection was not meant to be found here. Meaning perfection in a sense of ultimate fulfillment. I am not giving you a false picture of life. This is not the kingdom of God. This is not our home. We don't belong here. This is only school. Why he put us here, I do not know. I wish he hadn't done it. So anyway, you know, when he said perfection is not found here, when I was in India, I compared, I watched, I observed, and I thought in India, they are accepting life and life's imperfections more readily than we do here. We don't like to see imperfections. When there's imperfection of the face, the body, and so on, we try to carefully hide it and correct it and, you know, I mean, it's all right to use a little makeup. if it's not overdone. In fact, that was the time before our nuns were wearing the sari as a monastic garb. And one time when Master went to Encinitas and a group of the nuns were greeting him, there was an elderly nun among them who wore an awfully drab looking dress. And the expression on her face was equally drab. And Master, one look at her, he said, "Go put some lipstick on. You look like a vegetarian." Master had a wonderful sense of humor. Now, I don't want to give you a wrong impression, you know. The monastics are not eating any meat, but he was referring to the particular group of vegetarians, those that make diet their god, and all they think about is, Master said, about lettuce and nuts and nothing further. And usually they are the most sickly-looking people you can find. That's why usually it's that emphasized, is that I call us and the members proper eatarians, so that we wouldn't get into that category of, you know. So anyway, compared to India, here we don't like to see a dead body. The destruction of a dead body, that sort of thing. In India, I went a couple of times to burning ghats, and I saw dead bodies not hidden in a casket, peacefully lying in the midst of between burning logs, and the family sitting by and watching how that body disintegrated into ashes. They accept that. Because death is not the end. It is part of life. Life is eternal. Death is simply a transition into a higher plane of existence. Now, I'm going to read to you a passage from the Man's Eternal Quest. These are very strong words. But it's truth in a nutshell. And if you like, you can write it down. It is on page 454. And I say this particularly because when devotees have come for personal interviews to see me, in about 80%, I give them this passage to read. These are very strong words. There is nothing to live for except God. All else will go. Pray only for that which is abiding. Don't yearn for human love. It will vanish. Behind human love is the spiritual love of God. Seek that. Don't pray for home, or for money, or for love, or for friendship. Don't pray for anything in this world. Enjoy only what the Lord gives to you. All else leads to delusion. Man has come on earth solely to learn to know God. He is here for no other reason. Think of it. Man has come on earth solely to learn to know God. He is here for no other reason. To all those who seek and love him, he tells of that great life where there is no pain, no old age, no war, no death. Only eternal assurance that will never grow stale, a happiness always new. Now, isn't that exactly what we are all seeking? A state of consciousness where there is no pain, no old age, no war, no death, and eternal happiness. Isn't that it? Now, when Master is talking here, these strong words, he doesn't talk against friendship, marriage. He doesn't talk even about against trying to make a success in life outwardly. What does he mean? What is this whole thing all about? It is simply, in one word, discrimination, or using a stronger word, renunciation. And I do not mean renunciation in an external sense, becoming a monk or a nun. It's far deeper than that. Because this goes for everyone, monastic or householder. It means once and for all to renounce the thought that anything, any condition in this world can give us lasting fulfillment. That's what it means. And now, it's more complicated than that. Master said, when God made this creation, he really put his mind to it. Made it very complicated. With all this emphasis on detachment, Guruji said, the other extreme is just as bad. As soon as these people become interested in spiritual matters, they lose interest in everything else, and that is the wrong attitude. It is one reason, he said, that India lost her freedom. She misused the doctrine of non-attachment. And now he gives the key. Have the utmost interest in doing everything for God. Meaning no more for ego satisfaction or for seeking fulfillment in the external things and external pursuits. Have the utmost interest in doing everything for God. Doing things for God is a very personal experience. So satisfied. Hard, isn't it? On the one hand, we should not be indifferent. On the other hand, we should not be attached, going the middle road. But gradually, we catch on. Gradually we learn. And then we see that the whole thing is not a dark battle. Not at all, because when we look at the saints, we see they are the most happy of people. Why? Because they were centered in God and still were playing the outer role with great enthusiasm. That is the key. And the saints did not have easy lives. Some of them went through horrible experiences, horrible conditions. I'm thinking, for instance, about the little flower, Saint Therese of Lisieux. Who died when she was about, I think, 25, of tuberculosis. Her lungs eaten up by tuberculosis, piece by piece, she was coughing the lungs out, gradually suffocating. Her whole digestive organs disintegrating with TB, meaning she couldn't assimilate food anymore. She, at the same time, she was starving to death. And one time when her older sister was in her room crying, she asked, why are you crying? And her sister said, because you are suffering so much. And little Therese said, yes, but peace too, peace. Even then, she was centered in God. This is what we have to learn. However, and now here comes the big thing. We have to go to the causes, and there we have to work. There we have changes to make. And this is unfortunately what people in this world do not understand. Because maybe too subtle, and yet it is obvious in the scriptures. It wasn't so long ago, a man talked with me. He was all fired up. He said, "I want to work for peace. I want to get politically involved. I want to work for causes, nuclear freeze movement, and so on." At the same time, I knew that he was not faithful to his wife. He broke his marriage vows. Master said it is the wrong vibration, the contrary vibrations of people's actions and wrong thoughts, going against the laws of God. It is this which is building up more and more until there is enough there, until it comes to an explosion, manifesting outwardly as war and disturbances in nature. And when you look at the world, the selfishness, the dishonesty, in all levels, in government, in business, in the schools, in the home, in marriage, the drugs, promiscuity, all those things, I don't have to tell you, you know. There we have to work. Just shortly, a short time ago, I read a story. There was a woman and her daughter, and they went shopping. They went to a shoe store, and they both had a shoe size which was hard to find, and when they went to that store, they found that their size was on sale, and they selected several pairs, and there was one pair which both of them liked very much, but they decided they couldn't afford it, so they left. When they came home, opened the packages, they found that that pair was there. The clerk had made a mistake. What did they do? They went back to the store and brought the shoes back. It caused a sensation. The owner of the store invited them and he said to them, "Every day I am losing money to shoplifters." That clerk made a mistake. We would not have known. Why did you bring those shoes back? And they said, "We would have known." Now, don't you think it is remarkable? I think about 100 years ago, perhaps even 50 years ago, this going back and bringing those shoes back would have been normal behavior. Today, it is written up as an exceptional, as a sensational story. The ethical, moral, spiritual laws are disintegrating. Honesty, integrity, loyalty, all those things. So, as Dayama often says, and Master often said, we have to start. We have to live according to law. I remember many years ago, when there was war and destruction and famines and all those things, the Master said, "Look at the pounding people are getting. And why? It is because they have forgotten God. So we have to do the utmost to center our lives in God and to live according to His commandments." Why is it that all the great religions have as foundation those basic rules of right living, of living in harmony? God created that law, not to hurt us. He had to create that law in order to keep the whole universe in balance, in harmony. And it is not God, and sometimes I think when I hear or read about passages in the Old Testament, it is not God that is angry. It is not God that is punishing us. Never. God is a God of love. But he created the laws of harmony, of balance in creation. And if we are going against those laws, then we are getting a reaction. Then there is another question. Many people are asking that. Should we move out to the country to be safe if anything should happen? Well, my dears, we cannot be so naive as to think that the law of karma works only in the cities. Out in a country, a person can have a crippling or a deadly accident, or cancer or something else, isn't it? And people asked Master about cancer, and he said, certainly, cure for cancer will be found. But he said, don't think that the law of karma stops working then. He said, then you incurable diseases will come. So, we have to understand, not thinking in terms of external so much, but there is no security anywhere, in anything, except in righteous living, in prayer and meditation. There is only security in God, nowhere else. Master said you have to learn from others' experiences. He said it is not necessary to undergo every kind of experience in order to reach ultimate wisdom, meaning realization. You should be able to learn from the experience of others. Why should you go through the endless panorama of experiences in order to discover that nothing in this world can ever make you happy? Isn't it? That's so, you know, you read Master's writings. You don't have to read whole, you know, for hours and hours, but these sentences, this deep truth, don't read it just like a novel. Take those deep truths and dwell on them. Think about them. Make it your own. And when it comes from learning from examples of others, you know, I think the greatest example, at least to me, was our own Rajarshi Janakananda, who rose from utter poverty, became with hard work, became a business tycoon. And was he happy then? Was he secure then? Far from it. And it was then when he was searching, and then he found this path and these teachings, and he started to practice. And then he wrote, or he said, he didn't write, he said this. One of the blessings I have received through these teachings has been permanent relief from a state of nervousness, a state of strain, an inward state of uncertainty. Business tycoon. Strain, nervousness, uncertainty. I have gained calmness, peace, joy, and a sense of security, which he didn't have before with all his money. A sense of security that cannot come to anyone until he has found the true security of the soul. And then he said, no longer does it make much difference whether or not I have anything from the external world. I have learned to live by inward joy. It is the most beautiful thing that life can offer. That leads to another point. Some devotees say, I do not have enough time for meditation. But you know, We always find time for what we think is important. Isn't it so? And I go back to remembering how Master used to talk when he gave his lectures. Again and again and again he urged the devotees, simplify your life. He said you have to distinguish between your necessary necessities and your unnecessary necessities. And then he said those unnecessary necessities, cut them out. Why do we think we have to have so many things or do so many things? It is simply for one reason, to fill the emptiness in our lives, isn't it? And if we are filling that emptiness with those external things, we are still empty underneath. And if we are filling that emptiness with God, we are fulfilled. It is as simple as that. There's another point. The home used to be like a fortress. And the individual members of the family went out into the battle to work, go to school, and come back into the fortress and heal their wounds and recharge in the peace of the fortress. To a great extent today, that fortress has been destroyed through TV, isn't it? How can we possibly have peace in a home if we are bringing the world into the home? It was bad enough with radio, but it was not as bad as TV, where you see it visually. And what they are bringing, what they are sending, this is sensationalism. They are not sending the beautiful things, the peace-creating things into the home. It's not exciting enough. They are sending out the ugliness, the violence, the gross vibrations. How can we have peace? How can we then, after absorbing those things, those gross, violent vibrations, how can we then lift the consciousness in deep meditation into the vibrationless state? I know you're not watching much. I trust. But I would like to urge you, analyze and see whether you can cut off a little more. I know families who have completely gotten rid of their TV set. And they said what difference, the difference it made in their lives, it is absolutely incredible. They said, first of all, we have more time for each other. We have more time for the children. And the children have completely changed because they have become creative, they think. And they do not feel a need to go out and go into drugs and all kinds of things because we are giving them more attention. And above all, they say we have now more time for meditation. Now, thing is, let's face it, we all have made mistakes, right? If there is anybody here who hasn't made any mistakes, see me afterwards. And there is no point in looking back and thinking, oh my God, I haven't lived the way I should have. But Sri Yukteswarji's immortal words, forget the past. The past of all men is dark with many shames. Everything in future will improve if you are making a spiritual effort now. That's the truth. And when you look at the saints, some of them have made such terrible mistakes, you just wouldn't believe it. Really. It was not so long ago. Somebody gave me a book on Lord Chaitanya. It was great saint. He was an incarnation in the 16th century or something like that in India. And he had a couple disciples. They were in leading position in society, and they were, you wouldn't believe the lives they lived. Nothing but murder and drunkenness and rape. You just wouldn't believe it. There is nobody here who has such a record. Nobody. And they became saints. So, concentrate on God. And remember the past karma, the past bad karma, can be erased. How? Guruji says, if you practice Kriya Yoga, you'll burn up your past bad karma and reach the home of the Father forever and forever. And something else. He said, if you love God with all your heart, He will wipe out your karma. So, don't take the show so seriously. Concentrate on God. I want to end, practice the techniques. Practice the techniques. I want to give you a quotation in a Gita. Krishna says, without yoga, O Arjuna, renunciation is hard to attain. The yoga harmonized muni swiftly goes to the eternal. Why? Because if we are not practicing, we are in outer consciousness. We are body identified. We are totally identified with our external experiences and the big drama outside. And through yoga we are interiorizing and we are gradually more and more experiencing the reality behind this passing show. And when Krishna says, without yoga, renunciation is hard to attain, mind you, obviously, again, he did not talk about external renunciation. It's inner renunciation, because Lord Krishna was a householder. And he taught the Gita to Arjuna, who was a householder. It is the inner which counts. And then, the more you bring God into your life, the more you can say, I'm giving a quote by Brother Lawrence's beautiful, humble, devotional saint of the 17th century. I do not know what God has in store for me. I am in such tranquility that I fear nothing. What could I fear when I am with Him? I stay there as much as I can. May He be blessed for everything. Isn't it wonderful? This is the truth. There is the security. This is what we have to concentrate on. And then comes another point. You know, people are so concentrated on this mortal plane and this mortal body, as if there were nothing else beyond that. One time, a man asked Master, is there really such a thing as hell? And Master's eyes were dancing with laughter when he said, well, where do you think you are now? We are here in that plane. Who wants to stay here? You know, St. Augustine said, the soul on earth is set in a foreign country and in a prison, shut in a torture chamber. One of the monks, when I gave him that note, that quotation, he laughed and he said, maximum security prison, isn't it? Kriya Yoga is the key which gets us out. And don't think that there isn't anything beyond. I remember some years ago when I was minister in charge of our Encinitas temple, and we had there some meetings with the young adults, and sometimes we're discussing questions they had, and that just at that time there was a strong rumor going around again that there's going to be a big earthquake and all of California is going out into the ocean, and it could happen any moment now. So they asked me about it. I said, well, I don't know. Personally, I doubt very much that Mestre is establishing his international headquarters in California and then everything goes out in the ocean. But then I said, so let's take example. It happens right now and we all die. Then what? I said, then we are going to continue our satsang on the other side just like that. Do you think for one moment that we are here now in this wonderful fellowship, divine friendship, united in a teaching of Master, united in Master's love, and you think beyond that there is nothing? Ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. I remember one time one of the older disciples told us. There were several ones of the senior disciples were together with Master. And one of them said, oh, it is so wonderful now when we are all together. And time passes so quickly, pretty soon life is over and then all is finished. And Master said, what do you mean? On the other side, we know each other much better. Don't think this is it or this is the only place. They are higher realms. It's even better than Encinitas. I tell you, one time, some years ago, I was called to a hospital. There was a man, had known him for quite a few years. He was dying. He had for years, he had had some bad habits, and he was a good man, but he had those habits. And no matter how much he tried, he couldn't get over them. And finally, his health broke down completely. So I went to see him. I said, now forget it. Forget the past. Don't dwell on it. Fill your consciousness with the thought of God. God is compassionate. God is love. Think of Him, and everything will be all right. He said, no, no, I want you people to pray. I want to live. I said, life is eternal. It doesn't depend on the body. He said, no, no, I want to live. And I tried and tried and I couldn't get through. It broke my heart. And as I left the room, went through the door, once more he cried, remember, I want to live. A week later he was gone. And that very same week, I was called to another hospital. And there was a woman whom I had known before also, terminal cancer. She called and she said, you know, I am far enough in the lessons and far enough in my practice. I am ready for Kriya initiation. Could you come and please give it to me? And for a moment I hesitated because I thought if she is that far gone, she won't be able to practice Kriya. And I don't know whether she caught my thoughts or whether it was too obvious. She said, I know I'm too far gone. It isn't that. But I want to be sure that I am Master's disciple. I want to be his. And I said, if you feel that way, you do not need a formal ceremony. You are Master's disciple. He has accepted you. But I went anyway. I gave a very simple ceremony. I did tell her about the technique of Kriya Yoga. But mostly I talked about guru-disciple relationship, that eternal bond, unconditional, between guru and disciple. And then when she repeated the Kriya pledge, promising unconditional love, unconditional loyalty to guru, this path, tears were streaming from her eyes. Then she smiled and she said, "I want you to know, these are tears of joy. I cannot tell you what this means to me." And then her smile broadened and she said, "I can hardly wait to get out of here and to be with my master in a more tangible way on the other side." So, when I left, I talked with one of the nurses and I said, "Does she really have terminal cancer? She is so alert and she seems so strong." Nurse said, "Oh, yes." I asked, "How long will she live? What do you think?" And she said, "It's hard to say. A few more weeks." 4 days later, she was gone. Because she could hardly wait to be with her master in a more tangible way on the other side. Now with this, you know, I hope you understand, I do not mean to say that you're going to die soon. I just mean to say that there is a reality which is immortal, which is not touched by anything that this world is going through. Don't concentrate on the external show. Concentrate, do the best you can, and concentrate on God and Guru. And I close with these words by Master. Live today well, and the next step will take care of itself. Events proceed according to a beautiful plan. And what is that plan? That we are going home, to our immortal home of bliss. And then he said, trust fully in God. He never fails you. Ever cling to him, for behind the shadows, you are in his immortal arms.